You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
First of all, welcome to the show. You are the first Formula One driver to ever come on the Dan Le Batard show. This is a big deal.
Let's go.
You're also one of our favorite drivers. A fan sent me a picture of you once, and it had like an autograph on it. I was wondering if this was your real signature.
Did you sign this? Look at this.
That's really not my signature, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, wow. It's scam. It's fraudulent.
It's a big scam. Oh, I haven't even paid for it or anything.
Oh, no. What kind of introduction is that? You introducing him to counterfeit.
I can send you another one. I'll send you another one. That's probably one of my best ever photos. I'm a racing driver, but that's me modeling and pulling off some of my best modeling moves I've ever done in my life. So it's a good photo, but it's definitely not my signature.
Okay, you can send me another one. Our address is 1020 Ocean Drive, Miami Beach, Miami 33139.
Jessica, how are you starting this interview by fangirling and now just requesting autographs? This is not journalism. This is not cover the sport like a journalist.
Okay, I've got a follow up then. Lando, does every Formula One driver have to learn how to be a model?
Pretty much. I mean, there's a lot of photo shoots, a lot of videos. It's really not something I like. I'm really not good at it. I might look like it in this photo, which is surprising, but there's a lot of like apparel shoots you have to do, and there's partner staff always wearing their clothes and things. And, you know, putting on that blue steel kind of face is not an easy thing to do. So it's something you have to learn.
When you're shooting that intro, that's like da 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 da. Like, what are you thinking in your head while all the cameras are going around? Like, are you just trying not to laugh?
Through most of it, yes. There's a lot of retakes. There's probably like hours and hours of footage to get probably like 5 seconds of actual content worth. But there's a lot of it, especially if it's like if you're with another driver or if it's with Daniel in the room. Like, Daniel will try and make me laugh and prolong the filming for many, many hours. If I'm on my own, maybe I can deal with it. It's tough, you know, like trying to not laugh and trying to keep a straight face to a lot of it. But if Daniel's there, it makes it a lot worse and it takes a lot longer.
Okay, Lando, so most of our audience is in the United States, and the United States has obviously blown up in terms of like Formula One fandom in the last year. So you were in Miami for the race about a month ago. Chris and I attended. Dan attended. He had a terrible outfit on. We'll get to that later. Have you noticed a difference in the reaction you've gotten from American fans when you've been in Austin and in Miami?
Absolutely. I mean, I guess the biggest one was going to Austin last year after COVID, and then after two seasons of Netflix. That was huge, you know, with the fan attendance there. But obviously so many of the fans as well going, I'm your fan now, or I got into Formula One through watching Netflix. Like, pretty much 90% of the people say that now. And, you know, like, I think Austin was the highest attended Formula One race ever in history until that point. And I think a lot of it was just simply down to the Netflix series. So I think it's awesome. It's been such a good help for the sport to bring so many new fans in, so many people who maybe would never switch on the sport channel to watch Formula One, but then because of Netflix, I've actually got into it, which is awesome. And hopefully it proves that as like Americas as well. We're much cooler than NASCAR and much cooler than IndyCar as well.
Ooh. Wow. Shots fired.
Will that make headlines?
Yeah.
Will that be a thing?
I mean, it's sort of self-explanatory.
I mean,
Formula One is miles cooler than any of the other major racing circuits.
But can we make some headlines with him if he's going to be that flippant about it? How much cooler are you than these inferior brands?
I'm not going to lie. I'm a massive fan of NASCAR. I've never done it. I would love to. I would love an opportunity to go and drive a NASCAR and maybe not do an oval because they're scary and you've got to be a bit crazy to do those kind of things. But to drive a NASCAR, to go and do an IndyCar, not race, but just a test and drive that as well. Like, I have a huge and massive amount of respect for these drivers. I just think, like, as something to watch, I actually do enjoy watching NASCAR. And maybe some people are going to hate me for saying that. And I love watching IndyCar. But I think in terms of technology and racing and just level of everything, you know, in terms of performance instead of engineers and drivers and everything. Drivers is going to be a bit controversial. But I think we're much above everything else. So
I think it's fascinating when Formula One drivers say that either NASCAR or IndyCar is terrifying, because Max Verstappen made a similar comment around the time of the Indy 500 that, like, he would never do that because it's so scary. But I think a lot of fans think what you do is scary. So how do you see the difference in what you do and what they do?
It's a good question. I think, like, a lot of what we do, people would say it's scary. And I guess we're on, like, narrower roads. You know, we do the street circuits. I guess similar to IndyCar, but, you know, we do the street circuits and we have Monaco, right, which is sometimes just only, like, a few meters wide and you can be going, 180, 190 miles an hour. So there's many bad things that can happen in Formula One. I just think, like, over racing is and things like that, especially NASCAR. NASCAR, you know, they celebrate when you take someone out, like it's part of the racing, right? If you crash into someone and you spin them on the back straight on the last lap and you take them out and cause a massive wreck, like, it's celebrated. And it's just, everyone loves that kind of stuff. And it's just a different kind of attitude to Formula One. But it's also a lot of fun. Like, I enjoy watching it. I think it's all scary, right? It's all, you need... you need guts to do all of these types of racing, and that's the end of it.
Can you forgive my ignorance? You are saying they are inferior racers, correct? And I don't. And you said it's a bit controversial, but I do you look at it as the minor leagues of racing? Even while terrified by it, even while liking it, and even while respecting it, do you think of yourselves as the major leaguers and they're the minor leaguers?
Probably not as drivers. Absolutely not as drivers. I think as a spectacle to watch, I think so. I think there's more fan love, there's more attendance, there's more. It's a bigger spectacle of sport around the world. In terms of drivers, absolutely not. Like, I'm good at driving a Formula One car around a circuit that goes left and right. If I hopped in a NASCAR and I went up against any of the NASCAR drivers, I would get absolutely smoked and I'd probably finish last. So I can't say anything about the drivers. Absolutely not. Like I said, I have all the respect for everyone and so on. But I think just as a spectacle, as a sport, I don't think anything tops Formula One and just the eliteness of it all. But as drivers, we're all equal. We're all the top of our individual sports, whether it's IndyCar, whether it's Formula One, or whether it's NASCAR. Everyone's good at what they're doing and everyone's the best at what they're doing. And therefore, we're all on the same level from that respect.
Lando Norris of McLaren with us. And Lando, you mentioned the spectacle. That's sort of what Miami specializes in. What did you make of the spectacle of basically popping up a Formula One race in an NFL stadium? And you mentioned headlines. There were some headlines about the quality of the race, the quality of the racetrack. What did you make overall of the Miami experience?
The Miami experience was amazing. It was my first time really also being in Miami. I've been briefly before, but only for like a couple hours. So this is my first proper experience of Miami and the people and everything. And I did love it. Apart from the traffic was probably the only frustrating thing about it all. But everything else was awesome, you know, like especially at the race itself, with the amount of stars or celebrities there as well, like that adds to it. You know, that's what makes Formula One also so cool, is the people who are interested in it. It was a good race, I think. It might not have been, in terms of driving, maybe quite the level everyone was expecting, but I think everyone knows that it'll be better next time, simply. And we'll enjoy it more next time, and it'll be a better race again. So I think for the first race of a new circuit and in such a place, it's hard for everything to be perfect. And I think next year we're going to go, things will be more improved. But in terms of like fan attendance and the show that they put on around the race itself, I don't think there's many things which top it. So as an actual race weekend itself, I'd say it was probably one of the best ever Formula One.
What would you change for next year? Was it an issue with like track temperatures? Was it the surface of the track itself? Do you think the circuit needs to be adjusted in terms of like certain turns? Like what would you like to see next year?
I think the main thing which the drivers complained of, I think the main one is the track surface that they used. You know, you have Formula One cars pulling what, 3.5, 4G around some of the corners, sometimes more. And we were just tearing up the track, you know, like the concrete and whatever was coming apart. There were stones everywhere. So when you went off track, like there was absolutely zero grip. And it was making people afraid to pass, afraid to try things and stuff like that. It's just something that kind of almost shouldn't have happened, but it's something that they've learned from, and I think they're going to try to fix for next year.
We're talking to you ahead of the race in Azerbaijan, but the last couple, including the race in Miami, there are moments where you haven't felt good recently. Is everything okay after Monaco and Barcelona, where from a personal standpoint, you weren't feeling at your best, still pulled off some amazing finishes, but are you 100% now heading into Baku?
I am, thankfully. I'm back where I should be. I've been struggling with tonsillitis, a bit of a fever and everything. Quite a bad one, actually. So like it had started in Barcelona, and it was risky or not whether I was going to do the race, and I ended up doing it. But it was very, very close to not doing it. And I was struggling. I was in a lot of pain. I was struggling a bit. I was already a little bit better from Monaco, and I could do a better job in Monaco. And now I've had a one weekend off. We've had a little break since then, and I'm back to where I should be. So I'm excited. It should be a good weekend. Baku is always an amazing track. Always produces good racing, some crashes, red flags, yellow flags, whatever it is. So now I'm good. I'm back to where I should be. I can enjoy it again a little bit more rather than being in pain. But I'm just excited for this weekend.
So, Lando, you've never, I don't know if you've ever been to a Formula One race as just a fan, not as a driver or like a hopeful driver, but if you were going to a race, say, in Miami as a fan, and you know there's going to be a lot of people there and it's kind of like this big glitzy event, what would you wear to that event?
Oh, no.
What, as a guy or a girl?
As you, as Lando Norris. Like, would you wear basketball shorts? Would you wear a polo? Would you wear jeans? Like, what would you wear?
What would I wear? I think it was too hot. I think you'd wear like some nice white, I think like chinos kind of thing, some light white or slightly beige trousers, something cool, a little white shirt. You know, you want to look smart in Miami, right? There's a lot of people dressing
you
up.
You aren't going to do
so
this.
You've got to be in a nice white shirt as well.
Well,
so something cool in summer.
So, Lando, you're most of the way there, but we haven't exactly pulled off. The outfit here. Dan, who you see in your Zoom window
is
on your left, and he's kind of wearing like a basketball shorts, white polo look. Is that
I think he's going to side with me.
At a Grand Prix?
I think he's going to think I'm the best.
Check the shoes.
The best dressed in that picture.
Flap brim hat. Orthopedic shoes.
You can be honest.
Someone with my style, I couldn't pull that off with my coolness, but obviously you're probably a bit cooler than me, so you can pull it off.
That's right.
I suppose you're a bit. I'm probably a bit smaller than you, so basketball shorts for me almost look like trousers, which is an issue.
A bit.
Lando, beyond being a driver for McLaren and being a Formula One driver, what do people shout at you at airports or shout at you when they see you on the street? Because I think if I saw you, I'd probably shout, "It's Friday!" Then it's Saturday, Sunday. What?
Nah, you know what? That so many people have said that to me over the last year and a half or 2 years now. That has become my most hated song and saying.
Oh no! Like, oh possible. No! Oh no!
They've yeah. Ru- they've so ruined I really it. Hope you don't shout that at me. Otherwise, I'll probably give you the middle finger now or something.
So what would you prefer I shout at you instead?
Just call me your hero or something, and then I'll be happy with that.
All right, very good.
We have 1 minute left. Lando, I have a few quick questions for you. Do you prefer the Monaco Marina or the Miami Marina?
They're very different. Monaco is Monaco. It's a very unique circuit. Miami was very good for many different reasons.
Answer the question.
Just the marina, though. Answer which marina question. Would you rather hang
answer
out
answer the
at?
Question.
I'll have to go with Monaco. Monaco. Okay.
Do you say controversy or controversy?
What was the second one? Say that second one again.
Controversy. Do you say
how do you say controversy?
How do you say the word controversy? Well,
controversy.
Oh, okay. Thank so you don't say controversy.
No, I don't. I've never heard anyone say that in my life.
No chance.
Okay.
Last question.
Carlos or Charles? No, that's not the last question.
We're out of time.
Oh.
We have 7
Carlos.
Seconds, Dan. Carlos.
Easy.
Okay, last one. Do you say bona fides or bona fides?
You say what? Bona fide?
Yes.
Or bona fides.
What is the meaning of bona fide?
Like your bona fides, like your credentials for
your
something.
Credentials.
Like your bona fides, your bona fides.
I mean, I've never heard that word either. Bona fide probably sounds like the correct saying.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Witty loses again.
Again.
Thank you,
sorry.
Lando.
Thank you, Lando. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Pleasure.
This weekend. Bye.
Thank you very much. Lovely to meet you all.
It was nice to meet you, too.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Levitard.
I heard the hotel industry is moving away from providing shampoo and soap.
Oh, don't get me started on them.
Yeah?
Do not get me started on hotels and
oh,
the stuff
guys,
that they do.
Right, what they take from me, I feel like I'm entitled to take something from them. Thank you,
the
Billy.
They're going to yes. throw away the shampoo. They're going to throw away the soap. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the sheets, and I'm talking about the towels.
Stugats.
Oh, we really care about the environment, so please hang up your towels. Get out of here. You just don't want to wash these towels, because it's going to cost you money to wash these towels. All right? This whole thing about you're saving the whales or you're saving the turtles or whatever because I put my towel on a hanger. It is so full of it. All right? You just don't want to give me fresh towels every day. Just call it what it is. Tell me you don't want to give me fresh towels. I'm still going to throw it on the floor. All right? I feel like water is a renewable resource. And you're not really saving the ocean by using water to clean my towel, are you? Am I missing something? What am I missing?
Nail right on the head.
Am I missing something?
The end of the story.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugats.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Ricky, you just blew through Miami here. You came and you were giving a keynote address at the center of a cannabis lifestyle. What is it, a convention? What do I call it? What was your experience returning to Miami? And it is funny to see you at the center of some of this stuff that used to be terribly shameful, allegedly.
Yeah, you know, kind of the way I live my life is pretty busy. And so something comes up, the guys ask, you know, do you want to do this? And then I say yes. And then the day comes and I look at my schedule and I say, oh, I have a fight today. And so it doesn't usually like dawn on me until I get to the place. And so I land in Miami and I'm thinking about like just time. And it was almost exactly 18 years to the day that I made the decision to walk away from the NFL. And I was in the place and kind of a majority of my adult life and my experience with cannabis, it really originated in Miami. And so it's like I had all these flashbacks. And following morning, I gave the keynote. And that's what I talked about. You know, I talked about my journey and the story and how things have changed. And I really encouraged everyone in the room, you know, to own the responsibility of being a pioneer and to bring their authentic experience to bear in the way we move forward and create this lifestyle, to create this community. And it was a business conference, so create this industry.
You weren't someone who smoked in New Orleans? If this was a Miami thing?
You know, New Orleans, I was just starting to. You know, I was just starting to have a relationship with it. But it wasn't until I moved to Miami that it actually became part of my, like, everyday routine. And, you know, I was in the off season and I'd train in the morning and then in the evening I'd go home and I'd smoke and I would, like, visualize myself, like, leading the NFL and rushing. And it was, you know, it was this time I was in a comfortable place. I was on a really good team and I had an opportunity and I was able to like let go of the trauma of my first couple of years in New Orleans and really like embrace the new opportunity.
How dehumanizing was the drug testing once you ended up in the program?
Honestly, the drug testing was bad, but I think what really broke my heart was the counseling that we received. You know, I'm the kind of person where most things that occur, I'm always looking, you know, this is happening for a reason. And so when I failed the drug test and the NFL put me in the drug program, and part of it was we had to see a therapist once a week. And I was like, cool, it's an opportunity to get to know myself better. But when I started talking to the therapist, he wasn't trying to understand me. His job was to like get me to stop smoking weed so that I can continue to make money. And so that's what broke my heart is I was trying to understand myself better, but it was just another way I was put into a category and I felt even more alienated. So to me, if the NFL is saying that this is a program that's supposed to help people, you know, I think the NFL failed in that sense because it didn't help. If anything, it just made the situation worse.
Did it make any sense to you? I saw you talking at a conference at South by Southwest, and you were talking about how after games, the trainer would just come down the aisles with Vicodin and stuff, that the stuff that was more harmful to you was being just doled out on the plane.
Yeah. I mean, it was, yeah. But for me, I said no thank you because, you know, I know how to take care of myself. But a lot of guys, because, you know, they weren't as open to breaking the rules, you know, took what the doctors gave them. And a lot of those guys, after they retire, when they talk to me, they say they wish they would have realized this stuff much earlier in their careers.
Can you take us through how prevalent that sort of stuff was, Ricky? Because you always, you never did. I think you said one time you used painkillers, right? But you were pretty proudly someone who managed to carry 40 times a game without using much of that stuff, right?
Well, to be honest, like when I use painkillers, the Vicodin, this was before I was a sex master, okay? I used the Vicodin to like extend my stamina after the game. You know, it wasn't for the pain. So, yeah.
But then you were constipated, right?
Yeah, but that, you know, that's an easy price to pay. It was worth it. Yeah. Based on what we had available. But again, you know.
Did you ever play high? Did you never do that?
Mm-mm. I practiced once in Canada, but that was it.
Why? Why wouldn't you? Why was that a spot of, like, could you not do what you did? Even, is it not possible to play high and play well?
Okay, this is an interesting conversation. So I would, if you asked me today, I would say 100%. One, because I'm not being drug tested, so my tolerance is at a level where I can function that way. And I think the most important thing is because I've matured beyond it, I've cleared my mind of the stigma. And I think that the worst part about the negative stigma reputation of cannabis is that people in their mind create a blockage to allowing themselves to receive something pleasurable from this plant without having some kind of punishment. And so I think when people, they think, oh, I'm going to be stupid or I'm going to be silly, you know, then they make themselves more stupid and silly. When people look at it differently and say, hey, maybe this helped me feel more connected to my body and more connected to the scheme, and it's part of their routine that they smoke when they're watching film and they're getting their timing down, and it's more about getting into a certain kind of zone. Or even if groups of DBs, right, smoke together before the game, that might help them be in more alignment and connection, especially if they're watching film together. So I think it's just changing the conversation about what is cannabis and how can we use it, not so much, you know, fighting for the right or this adversarial kinds of conversations. I'm more about utility.
So you think that the stigma prevents people from potentially being able to be incredibly high functioning while under the influence of marijuana?
100%. 100%. Because most people don't even think it's possible. They don't even allow their minds to go there. They just, literally, when you say it to them, they laugh, right? There's no place in their mind where that could potentially be a reality, so it never can be.
I kind of get what you're saying, because, like, I hypothetically, if I smoked, like, I would presume that I'd be hungry, and then it's like, am I hungry because I hypothetically smoked weed, or is this, like, a Pavlov's dog thing? Like, I feel like I should be hungry, so I'm going to go eat a bag of kettle chips.
Yeah, but in the reverse sense, if someone says, the reason I'm smoking is because when I work out, I want to really target certain muscles, that the energy of the experience goes to, you know, I get on the rug and I start doing my yoga and I really get in tune with my muscles, right? I'm utilizing the energy in a proactive way to improve the quality of my life. And so that's the end result.
I would think that Kevin Durant could play great high, that he'd be relaxed and he'd be centered, and he smoked so much that I'm guessing if you asked him, have you ever played high? My guess is that he would play very well high without any impediment whatsoever.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
What do you make of him sitting down with David Letterman and the climate changing so much that he says to Letterman, yeah, I'm high right now. Kevin Durant is just...
Well, I was at South by Southwest, as you mentioned earlier, and sitting next to me was his right-hand man. And part of the conversation was the deal that Kevin Durant signed with Weed Maps, which was public. And we were talking about, you know, that KD was going to start sharing his cannabis use publicly, you know, and it was like... It's beautiful. It's amazing, because part of the stigma, and I think the reason the stigma exists, because all the people that smoke, they lie. They lie about it, you know? And just recently, I completely understand why, you know? I've been, you know, looking at social media lately and looking at responses and stuff, and people either love what I'm saying or they discount everything I say, and they say that I must be smoking something or that I'm high. And so I understand why people don't share, because it gives people permission to discount everything about you. You know, you could be like a wino, it's complete alcoholic, idiot. But that never gets like, that never, you know, you just are known as a partier. People don't discount you as a business person or as an intelligent person. It's crazy.
You think that some of the things that you say that can be shaman, that can be wisdom, that can be things accrued from a lifetime of scars and experiences can be dismissed simply with, they don't agree with you, that pothead, he's smoking again. What a dope.
Yeah, but the crazy part about it is the shamans were the ones that were high all the time. Like, that's what they did, right? Right. And it wasn't like they were partying, right? They had work to do. And they realized that certain substances facilitated being them in a place where they could do their work.
I don't know why you would go into the acid well of poison, contamination, and disease that is social media. Your life seems so happy, Ricky. Did you dare to do this after you ventured out and said, I've changed my name publicly? You're married to a white woman. You changed your name to a white woman's name. Is this the reason that you ended up in the social media? This is not for you, Ricky. This is a septic tank. You need to stay away from it.
Actually, I think someone screenshotted something and sent it to me. And that's where I saw it. And I was like, and I read the article and I was like, that's beautiful. You know, and then I saw the comment and I was like, huh? And I realized, like, I think it's beautiful. And I heart those posts whenever I see them, because it just shows people's ignorance. Like, it's
cool. Everyone has the right to their own opinions.
For those who do not know, I should tell them that you just casually mentioned after, you know, it was a private thing between you and your wife for many months, if not a year, where you had changed your name. And you explained it last week, and the reaction to it was very strong, was it not?
I mean, the reaction that I experienced, again, because I don't spend time on social media, was my wife was in a good mood. And all, you know, she was getting a bunch of high fives, and, you know, the people that actually text me, and like, they didn't say, what did you do? They said, I get it, cool. You know, it was... So my personal experience that it was 100% positive, you know,
it was an act of love.
Even my mom didn't say anything negative about it. Like, thanks. That's a win.
It was an act of love. Correct. And so you're amused by the idea that people outside of your love would judge it by saying, why is he changing his name? What a fool.
Well, the thing is, if more people value their intimate personal relationships more than they value what other people outside of those intimate relationships thought about them, I think the world would be a much better place.
What is your relationship with that sort of criticism when it does enter your sphere somehow? Like, do you try and figure out what is the motivations behind that person? Or do you mostly try and dismiss it? Because you've been under some measure of public scrutiny for a large portion of your life. How do you deal with it?
Honestly, like... this is like, and it surprised me, right? I did a podcast and someone, like, he brought it up that I was getting a lot of flack. I didn't know I was, but he brought it up. And it was really hard for me to care. Like, really hard for me to care. Like, and it's kind of surprised. Like, it wasn't even a consideration. It was cool. It was a cool feeling.
It's a breakthrough for you, Ricky. You've been telling people for I don't know how long, embrace your weird, embrace your authentic. It'll get you to happier if you can just embrace the things you are and not care what others think, what norms are, what patterns are. Like, for you not to care at all, as black people are saying, he ain't black enough. He married a white woman and he took her name. And what's he talking about? He needs to be more proudly black. What's wrong with this fool? For you to arrive in a place where you simply don't care, Ricky, there's great freedom and relief in that.
Well, I don't want to say that I don't care, because I think that sounds a little flippant. It's just that when I hear those words, I see them for what they are. Is people's, like, that's where people are. Right. And to me, like, to bring myself, and this is probably a judgment, down to that level, just to make myself feel bad, it doesn't even make sense to me. You know, it's like, and again, it probably sounds condescending, but genuinely in my heart, I really pray for those people. Because if someone can take something that's generated out of love and turn it into something that's like hatred, like, they're doing that in a lot of other places in their life. It's not just here. And so I, like, pity those people.
Social media is not for you.
Well, maybe it should be. I mean, there's so much, like, shit out there. Maybe people spray, like, a couple squirts of perfume, you know? At least people know that it exists. I think the sad part about social media is people think that that's reality or that's life. Ugh.
Or I think sometimes the greater frustration for some people is they feel like they're screaming into an abyss. And, like, most often it's just to solicit a reaction, right? The second anybody engage with their, quote, trolls, they immediately roll over on their belly and just are looking for a tummy scratch. Like, for the most part, people are just trying to be heard in some way, no matter how preposterous or mean.
Yeah, and I think that's the sad part, is that people haven't surrounded themselves with people that listen to them. And so they have to go to vicious strangers to be heard.
We've got a bunch of different horoscopes from the last couple of weeks, because you were not on with us last week. So from Tom Cruise, Donald Trump, Tommy Pham, Sheryl Sandberg, Amber Heard, and Mike Trout, did you have someone that you chose?
I chose Amber Heard.
All right.
Chose Amber Heard.
So Amber Heard was at the center of just an ugly, ugly trial that I don't believe has any winners, no matter what the verdicts are. All of it seems awful for everybody involved. Amber Heard chart showed you what?
In fairness, right, this is a trial about a marriage, and both the trial and a marriage, you need two people.
Okay. And interestingly enough, in astrology, the same place you look for legal issues, trials, and marriage is the same area in the chart. It's kind of fascinating. And in Johnny Depp's chart, in the seventh house, the house of marriage and legal struggles, the planet Saturn is there. And Saturn is the planet of difficulty, you know, among other things, maturity. It's, I think, most telling in this situation, Saturn is the planet of our karmic paycheck. It's like, you know, sometimes people do stuff that seems like it's not right, it's not fair, and they seem like they get away with it, but later it comes back to haunt them. Or, you know, eating a lot of junk food and you think you're fine, and then you get older and you realize your arteries are clogged. Okay, that's Saturn. Okay. But all the same time, if you do well with Saturn and you have, you know, order and discipline, then you age gracefully and you manifest more the positive side, which is wisdom. Okay. So a lot of people who know a little bit of astrology know about the Saturn return. So, right before we turn 30, this signal of maturity. Okay. But also Saturn comes right back around just before we turn 60. Okay. And right now, Johnny Depp is in his second Saturn return. Okay. So this idea of a karmic paycheck, right? Karmic paycheck. How did you do in relationships, Johnny? Right. Oh my God. And like you said, right, there's no winners here. Okay. There's no winners here. Okay?
Well, what are you laughing? What are you laughing about though? What is it that just you think that this is having the insides of everything shown to everyone in the world is karmic paycheck for his relationship history?
Yes. Yeah. Right. If he would have chose better, a different partner, he wouldn't have been in this situation. Okay. It's real. Like this is Saturn. Saturn is the reality of the choices we make. Okay, right. But the same thing in a positive sense. If we can suffer gracefully, we learn something. Okay, and that wisdom is useful. But sometimes lessons are so heavy, it's really hard to learn. But you know, time will tell. Time will tell. I mean, looking at his chart, I could spend an hour and a half talking about this dynamic. It's so fascinating. Okay, but now onto the other side.
No, but go ahead. Before you get to the other side, go ahead and give us the dynamic that you're talking about and how their ingredients mix to create a volatile cauldron.
The simple thing, the two things that I think that jumped out about Johnny Depp's chart and what's going on right now is the Saturn and the house of relationship during his Saturn return, okay? And it's marriage, it's a lawsuit, you know, and in his 10th house, okay, which is the house of career, profession, and also being triggered now, he's got Venus and Mercury. And so Venus is the planet of relationship, love, and Mercury tends to indicate a younger spouse, okay? The other thing about it is in Johnny Depp's chart, the planet Neptune, okay? Altered states, you know, secrets. It's in his fourth house, which is the house of home and family, okay? Things that are typically buried, right? People don't know what goes on in my home, okay? In his chart right now, that's being triggered mightily, okay? And his secrets, right? His relationship with substances that were something that were his private relationship in his home is now for the world to see, okay? So again, based on, you know, the decision of who to marry.
The chart basically tells you, you're reading the chart and you're like, yes, everything that has just happened here is confirmed by when I mix these two charts together.
A chart can't predict the outcome. It can predict the drama, right? But you can see this. We are put in situations and we make choices, and those choices have consequences. And so you can see potentials, right? But I look at someone's chart and I see a potential, like my chart. I have an afflicted Mercury, okay? Like my mouth has gotten me in trouble a whole bunch, right? But thankfully, I've, you know, learned, right? I've refined the way I think and the way I communicate. Interesting. I've matured, but it started off. Yeah. My Mercury is pretty afflicted.
See you later, Ricky. We'll talk to you again next week, sir.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think. about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting and rules for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text SUNNY to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text SUNNY to 200-300. That's SUNNY to 200-300. SUNNY to 200-300.